Now, though, our sound advice guest this afternoon is the gadget detective himself, Fevzi Turkalp. And brilliant timing, actually, to have you on, Fevzi, because technology very much in the news. And a lot of us a bit confused, I think, as to why WhatsApp won't let the security services have these messages that were allegedly sent by the Westminster attacker. I mean, if these people are plotting against us, why on earth can't we find out what they're saying?
That's because WhatsApp don't have the messages. WhatsApp, as it's created at the moment, is designed in such a way that no one has those messages, including WhatsApp. The only people that will know those messages are the person who sent it and the person or people who are intended to receive it. It's what's called strong end-to-end encryption. So it's a very effective way of scrambling a message, and it doesn't get decrypted. It gets encrypted, scrambled as it leaves your phone, and only unscrambled when it arrives at the other person's phone. And in between, if you do intercept the message, it's just gobbledygook.
So there's no way then of the security services accessing that encrypted material?
Well, no, that's not quite true. And Amber Rudd hasn't been quite straightforward about this, because if you look at the legislation that covers this, there's a piece of legislation that's called the Investigatory Powers Act. It came in at the end of last year. The government was trying to get this in for some time and snuck it in under cover of Brexit when everyone was looking the other way. And that legislation is arguably the most intrusive legislation of any Western European country or even in America. It's more like what you would see in an authoritarian state. So they have significant powers. And one of those powers is they can legally hack the phones and computers of anyone in this country, whether or not they suspect them of being guilty of a crime. Now, if you suspect someone, they have the tools to hack that person's smartphone. That person won't be aware that they've been hacked. And then that program that they can put on their smartphone can take those messages off their device, recover them for themselves, before they're sent, and therefore before they're scrambled. So although the sending process is encrypted, it's not encrypted on the actual device itself. So if you can bug a phone, do that. So they can do that. You know, they have the ability. If they have a person of interest, doesn't even have to be a suspect, as the law dictates, they can go in and bug their phone effectively. Now, what it doesn't allow them to do is what we found out they were doing in the Snowden revelations, which is that the NSA in America, with the help of GCHQ here, were doing mass surveillance of the population. So instead of spearfishing, they were trawling. And all of this is a reaction to that. That's why last year WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook, introduced strong encryption. That's why Apple increasingly strengthens their encryption. It is because those companies lost a lot of reputation when it was found out that they were leaking like sieves to the NSA, who had a tap into the data pipe going in and another one to the data pipe coming out, and nothing was safe. They took all the data, they copied it, they held it in a data center and searched it to their heart's content.
It's that whole argument, though, isn't it? If you've got nothing to hide, then why does it matter if they're able to read your messages?
Absolutely, and we should therefore no longer draw our curtains in our homes or close our bathroom doors when we're using the bathroom, because we've got nothing to hide. That's a nonsense. Look, when you can tell I feel strongly about this.
I was picking that up, that vibe, Fevzi.
When we suffer a terrorist attack, we're always told we won't be cowed by terrorists. They hate our freedom and they want to change our way of life. Well, one of the most fundamental freedoms we have in this country is freedom of speech. And without freedom of speech, there cannot be a functioning democracy. So how are we going to have journalists breaking news stories with their sources? Who's going to come forward and speak, you know, be a whistleblower to a journalist if they know that their communications with that journalist can be hacked at will? And once you break this encryption so that the government gets in, let's say you provide a master key or a backdoor, as it's sometimes called, you've weakened that lock. You don't just weaken it so the security services can use it.
It's weak
for everyone. Foreign governments, commercial competitors, spies, people who would like to blackmail other people. All sorts of people can then access that information. If you either encrypt something properly or you don't bother.
It'll be interesting to see what the result is of these meetings then that Amber Rudd is having.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that she's speaking to European colleagues, because obviously if Britain tries to bring in further laws, well, first of all, as I say, I mean, it's interesting, Edward Snowden tweeted when the new laws came in this country at the end of last year, the UK has just legalised the most extreme surveillance in history of the Western democracy. It goes further than many autocracies. And that's the problem, you see. You can trust today's government, but it's always tomorrow's government you have to worry about with these things. Imagine what Hitler could have done with you know, those sorts of surveillance powers.
So you have to think.
You know, even if you trust your government today, we're seeing some changes in governments around the world, and you may not be so comfortable with it in the future. You may find that you may belong to a group of people who could be targeted by the state or others.
I suppose that's the thing, particularly when it comes to technology. People think, well, it's not really going to affect me.
No. It's interesting because it's kind of abstracted. You know, if someone is spying on you, first of all, you're not necessarily aware of it and they're not physically there. If you and I were having a private conversation in a room, how would we feel about a government minister sitting there or a civil servant with a notepad writing down everything we said? You wouldn't stand for it. Equally, you wouldn't stand for someone peering in through those curtains that you haven't drawn or into your bathroom. You know, you have to have basic privacy, and we're moving, into a situation where, you know, people are losing privacy and there's not a discussion. The final thing I'll say to you about this is, even if they change the law to force companies to open up their weaken their encryption, all that would happen is that the general population would have their privacy encroached upon, because we all continue to use WhatsApp because all our friends use WhatsApp and our business colleagues, people expect us to be on it. But terrorists would move off WhatsApp. They'd move onto either a little known but similar encryption system, or they'd develop it themselves. The mathematics behind this is well known. Any good software engineer can build an encrypted communication system, and they don't need to make it popular. They don't need to have a billion users like WhatsApp. All they need is for it to be on the phones of their cell. So what would the end result be? They still won't be able to hack.
They'll just find another way.
Well, yeah, they'll find another way, and in the meantime, our privacy's gone to hell in a handcart.
I suppose the argument, though, about the whole privacy thing is, you know, it's a sacrifice people are willing to pay if it means that we're kept safer. It's an interesting debate. You can get in touch on that, or if you have a question for Fevzi on anything related to technology, maybe you've just bought yourself a new phone, a new laptop, it's not working like it should be, whatever the issue, he's helped people before change things that were coming up on their TV screen. I mean, he can help you with your remote control, your washing machine, you name it. If you've got a question about your gadget, maybe it's not working properly, you can get in touch. The number 03-459-57-0057. And he's good, old Fevzi. He can pretty much fix any gadget whatsoever. Although, how are you with observation towers?
Excuse me, old Fevzi?
Old Fevzi. Young Fevzi. How are you when it comes to fixing observation towers? Brighton's I-360 closed again due to a temporary fault.
Yes.
They're now dubbing it in the press, I see, Faulty Tower. Someone's going to be very pleased with themselves coming up with that headline, aren't they? Yes, we're still unsure as to what's gone wrong this time. Of course, this closure comes less than a month after it closed for 4 days when a damaged data cable caused passengers to be stuck for more than an hour. The ride has experienced a few problems since it opened last August. It was closed on Sunday, yesterday, and it's not due to reopen until Tuesday. Michael is in Seaford. Michael, tell us about the problem you have with your Fire Stick.
Yeah, I have this Amazon Fire Stick, and it seems to have taken my television over.
Television?
Well, yes. I basically, when it's plugged in, I can't use any Freeview channels, and there are about 100 odd Freeview channels, aren't there? I can't even listen to Radio Sussex on the
Right, this is an emergency, Fevzi. We need to get this sorted.
So we can get normal service can be resumed once the Fire Stick is disconnected.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so As Michael will be aware, but I'll explain. So an Amazon Fire Stick is a device that allows you to access internet-based television content on your screen, and it plugs into one of the what are called HDMI connectors on the television. Yeah. And a modern TV may have 2, 3, or 4 of these. And these are different ways of inputting a signal. So that would be one. You might have a, you know, a DVD player that might still plug into another one, or a Skybox or something like that. Now, normally what happens is you need to be able to tell your television which of those many potential signals it should be displaying on the screen, because many inputs, one screen, so you have to choose. And the way that you normally do that is just by using the TV remote control, and you press, there's an input button, you press it repeatedly and it cycles around the options. One of the options will be the internal free view. So having explained that, Michael, is it the case that when you use your TV's remote to try and select the normal TV, i.e. the internal FreeView tuner, is it not letting you do that? Or
does it's not displaying. What I know what you're talking about, yeah. You know, Febzy. It normally would display TV, external source,
yeah,
and HDMI, as you say.
Yes.
But we're not getting a display, so we can't move. We can't choose an option there. We basically... it seems to paralyse, you know, the remote control when it's working. It works fine, but it just paralyses the remote control as far as the television choices.
But the Fire Stick itself works, and you can access that.
Oh yes, I can watch iPlayer or Netflix or whatever on there, you know.
Do you think it's that it's not giving over control to any of the other inputs? Does it feel like it's constantly stuck on the Fire Stick?
Well, it does. Yes, that's the feeling I got the other evening. Yeah. Now, having said that, it used to let us do that.
Yeah.
And
okay.
A member of the family came along and just started using it on one occasion, and just a bit of bad luck. And it's
okay.
I can't get out of the locking system.
Yeah. Okay. Michael, so there's two possibilities that spring to mind. One is, and I hope it's not that, is that you've either got a faulty stick or a TV which is incompatible with the stick, and that can happen, but it's unusual. The other possibility is that some TVs are a little bit too clever for their own good.
Ours is, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And I need a stern talking to, frankly. But what they try to do as a convenience for you is they try and work out which of those inputs is active, and therefore which one you're likely to want to watch. So if you were to, you know, power up your Skybox or pop a DVD in the DVD player, that it will automatically switch to that one and try and stay on that one. It's possible that a setting on your TV has been changed to allow it to do that. And it's there as a convenience, but that sometimes can give rise to problems like this. So you would, in those circumstances, you'd need to check your in the menu structure to see if there's a setting that controls which of those inputs it goes to, and it will refer to it as something like active input detection, something of that nature.
Yeah. See, Fabsy, when I put the Fire Stick to sleep, we're still locked out of the TV, you see.
Yeah,
so it's, as you say, it's probably more to do with the television than the Fire Stick.
And does it do the same thing irrespective of which of those HDMI sockets you plug into?
Oh, I didn't know I had more than one.
Most TVs have at least two.
I see.
So you see, the FreeView is built into the TV. All modern TVs have a FreeView receiver. Ever since we stopped having analog broadcasts and we had digital, they built the FreeView receivers in. So that doesn't use an HDMI socket. But you should have at least two. They may be in use by other things, but it's worth even just swapping them around.
Oh, yes.
But you may have some spare ones as well. I mean, it's a modern flat screen TV,
yes,
is it?
Yeah. Yes.
So you'll have at least a couple. You may have as many as four. So I suggest also try that. Beyond that, you can try and update the firmware inside the Fire Stick. That's to say, the internal software that gives the Fire Stick its functionality. And you can look to see if there's a software update available for the TV itself. If you try all of those things, then unfortunately you may be looking either at a fault or an incompatibility.
We're talking gadgets with Fevzy, and time for your gadget of the week.
Yes, I'm smiling now. Having been upset earlier, I'm now smiling because I'm thinking of my gadget of the week. So it's from a manufacturer called Kit Sound, which is all one word. It's a pair of bookshelf speakers, that's to say loudspeakers that are you know, small enough to go on a typical bookshelf, so not the great clunking things. They're called Parallax, that's the branding on it, Parallax bookshelf speakers. And why am I covering speakers? Ask me, Alison, why would I be covering
speakers? Why would you be covering speakers?
There's nothing exciting about speakers. No, except that these ones are rather good. So, these are speakers that allow you to play sound, music, whatever it is you want to listen to, but they have a variety of audio inputs. Just as with Michael a moment ago, we were saying how TV sets can have a number of inputs so you can connect different things to them. So with these speakers, so you have the conventional phono inputs which allow you to connect, for example, your computer or laptop or perhaps a games console if you want a really good sound. And these are separate speakers, so you know you can put them 6 feet apart and have a proper surround stereo. But there's also an optical input on these speakers. Now, optical means that the sound that goes in doesn't go through a wire, it goes through a fiber optic cable. And the most common source of optical sound, if you like, that we have in our homes is our TV sets. Almost all modern TVs have got an optical audio output, which means you can have a digital stream of audio coming out of your TV, and instead of those really weak speakers, and we've spoken about how flat screen TVs have got great pictures but really poor sound because they're so thin. The TVs are so thin, there's no depth for the speakers. Well, you can just take a simple cable, which is actually provided with these speakers, out of the TV, optical cable, into the speakers, and away you go, and you've got stereo sound for your TV set. The third way of getting sound in is Bluetooth. So we are in the modern age, so your smartphone and your tablet and any other Bluetooth-enabled device, such as a laptop, for example, can connect wirelessly to these devices. You get a remote control so you can switch between the three sorts of input. The sound quality is great. It's 30 watts a channel, and that's proper watts. That's what's called RMS, not the other dodgy type.
I love it when you say things like that. It's 30 watts a channel. I have no idea what you're on about, but I'll take your word for it.
I'll give you an idea. That will comfortably fill a room with sound without trying too hard, and it will be loud, and you won't play it at the top of its volume because it will be too loud for you and too loud for the neighbours. So that gives you an idea. So the sound quality is good. So these things are just like... I haven't measured it, but I guess about 6 inches across, about 8 inches deep, and about 10 or 11 inches high. And
see, that's
solid.
Funny as well, isn't it? Do you remember years ago, the bigger the speaker, the prouder you were. Do you want to come and see my speakers? They'd be like massive, great, big things taking up half the room. Whereas nowadays, it's we want it as small as possible.
So this is quite interesting because when the iPod came along and then after that the iPhone, we switched from being hi-fi nuts that were obsessed with sound quality to quantity, not quality. So how many, we could fit 100 songs in, then we could fit 1,000, then we could fit the whole internet of songs into it, and yet they were all on these really poor quality MP3 files
that were
similar to an audio cassette in quality. Now you've got a device like this Parallax speakers that are modern, they allow you to connect wirelessly and optically as well as conventionally, give you a remote control, give you really good sound quality, because a lot of these Bluetooth speakers that you get, they're good because they're portable, but the stereo speakers are close together, so you don't get the full stereo effect, whereas with these ones you can put them, you know, 6 or 7 feet apart if you want.
How much are we talking?
Well, that's the other nice thing, £136. I saw it online just earlier. I've given it 4-star rating, and I'll just mention one more nice trick it does. If you're connected via Bluetooth, you can use the remote control for the speakers to skip tracks and pause and play again. So the way that works is that the infrared signal goes to the speakers, it then communicates with the iPad or tablet or iPhone via Bluetooth and tells it to skip the track. So the device is being controlled by the loudspeaker. So it is clever. And I think that, frankly, if you're in the market for that sort of thing, it's £136 well spent. I've got a pair of very expensive studio monitor speakers, and they're not as good as those, but they're a fraction of the cost, you know. And again, if you were interested in making music or some such, they'd make a good pair of budget studio monitors as well.
Do you know, Fevzy, I'd love to see inside your house. I've just got this vision of it being sort of like, kind of James Bond-esque, just gadgets as far as the eye can see.
Alison, I would love to invite you. I think you're married, though. can't. You see that? I don't think that will work particularly. But yeah, you come. I won't show you my etchings, but I'll show you my gadgets if that's all.
Yeah,
right.
Perfect. Fevzi, thank you as always. You can always get free tech advice by following Fevzi on Twitter at Gadget Detective. There's also the tech phone-in that you can listen back to. It's the BBC's Let's Talk About Tech podcast.